Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes.
Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Schmerl. And I am just a dude.
And I am your other co-host, Riley Schmerl. I'm a future law student and I guess a dudette. Guess that's what I am.
Boy, we're going to have to change that whole opening.
Yeah, it's going to have to move it around a little bit. So yeah. In case y'all haven't heard, Riley has joined the court-appointed podcast as a co-host. So welcome, Riley.
Yay.
Thanks, guys.
We're glad to have you.
Yeah, super glad to have you. And recently, I've just been overwhelmed with work, and it's taken a lot more of a front seat on what I have to do. So I just don't really have as much time to dedicate to the podcast and to court appointed. So Riley just recently knocked the LSAT out of the park and then would be going to law school fairly soon. And I thought it would be a good idea to have Riley on and have Riley kind of come in a little bit and talk about the law and some law adjacent stuff, and maybe even talk about her law school career as she goes along.
Yeah, we wanted to keep things going. We feel like we have a good following, and we just wanted to try to be more consistent. And Riley has been very interested in the law for a while. Part of that probably rubbed off from you, Uncle Michael.
I don't Definitely. Know. I think it was maybe more from Legally Blonde. What do you think, Riley?
A little bit of both.
And SVU or SUV or whatever it is.
SVU. SUV is the car.
Yeah, she likes that one.
Yeah, Riley, you got to get used to that one. That happens all the time.
As long as you don't say duty.
So, Riley, you just got done taking the LSAT. Does that feel like a big weight to have off your shoulders?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I've been studying for, 6 months by the time I took the test. I'd been studying pretty full time. So not having to ever study again or take that test again is definitely a big relief.
Now, it's honestly been so long since I took the LSAT. I don't even really remember. I know there was like a game section. I remember that much and some sort of logic portion. But is that still on there? Or what does it consist of?
Yeah. So, pre-pandemic, it was four sections, two of logical reasoning and one of reading comprehension and one of logic games. But since the pandemic, they've switched to the LSAT Flex, which is entirely online. And that is the only version that's offered now through June of next year is what they've decided. So it's only three sections, one of each kind of question instead of two logical reasoning sections. And a mandatory written portion now, the first time you take it, you have to do the written part as well. But that's not scored. That's just like a writing sample.
I think they did that for mine, too. I think there was a written portion, but you're right. I don't think it was scored either. But LSAT Flex, that sounds kind of, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, it was easier in the sense there were fewer questions, so it wasn't as long, and logical reasoning was my least favorite part, so having only one section was nice, but to me, it seemed harder than all my regular practice tests because there were fewer questions.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of good because she could take it right there in her dorm room, and otherwise she would have had to drive to Columbus and take it.
Mm-hmm. Really?
They only offered it in Columbus and Cincinnati, I think, this time around before they decided to do it all online.
Yeah, I think I took mine at Marshall. I think I took it in Corbley Hall.
Oh.
If I remember correctly.
Well, it saved her from having to travel. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The night before I took my LSAT, my ex-girlfriend wrecked my Jeep.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, that evidently was good luck. You passed.
Yeah.
I think I just pretended it didn't happen and just like tried to stay on target.
So you still got the Jeep, so it survived too.
It did. The relationship did not.
The only casualty was this girlfriend.
The Jeep's more important.
Well, so this episode, Riley actually has an interesting topic. What do you got for
us? Yeah. So I thought, you know, everyone's been all talking about the British royal family recently with Harry and Meghan's scandalous interview with Oprah. So I thought it was interesting. They were talking about some things about certain members of the family, but they couldn't name them. And then, you know, news sources and tabloids in the UK couldn't even like guess as to who it might be. They couldn't name names because they said they didn't want to get in any legal trouble. Which I thought was interesting because, you know, in American tabloids, they can pretty much say whatever they want to say without worrying about many repercussions. So I thought it'd be interesting to look at the differences between libel and defamation in the UK and the US.
That's a good topic. And it was kind of interesting because I remember I was reading something about it and they didn't want to talk about which member of their family made the kind of racist comments and undertones about skin color and things like that. They didn't actually say who it was.
Mm-hmm.
They only named a couple that it wasn't, said it wasn't the Queen or Prince Philip.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody else, it's fair game.
Yeah.
That's right. They threw everybody else under the bus. Well, I guess probably what most of it boils down to in the difference between the two is one of the main reasons that we're here in America is freedom of speech. And
that is true.
So yeah. We have our First Amendment is based on freedom of speech. Now, England, the country we fled, they didn't care so much for that. There were things they wouldn't let you say and didn't allow you to say. So kind of at the very core of all of this has to do with the American belief in freedom of speech, which is the same as, by God, I want my guns.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit different. They actually put freedom of speech ahead of by God, I want my guns, because they said freedom of speech is number one.
That's right.
So yeah, that's,
guns
that's
are number two, though.
Yeah, guns are number two.
So they have to try harder.
Yeah.
Got our priorities straight here in the United States. But yeah, I mean, I think that was probably first and foremost on the founding fathers' mind was like, hey, we want to be able to say what we want about the people in power, because if we say something bad about the president or anybody like that, we don't want to be locked up and thrown away the key for being critical of them.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting as I was looking into it, they actually described it as English law favors protection of reputation, and in America we value protection of freedom of expression and speech. So that's interesting. They care about your reputation and how you're seen over in the UK more so than, you know,
stiff up a little
freedom
chap.
Of speech. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, okay.
That is kind of interesting. And the strange thing is that a lot of our laws are the same because our law is derived from common law from Great Britain. So whenever there's something that varies greatly like that, it is kind of a major distinction.
Yeah, just like old Lodowick, right? That one about chasing the fox onto the other person's property.
That's right. Tally ho.
Yeah.
That harkens back to one of the first episodes, I think, Tommy.
Yeah. Number one. I think you're right.
Well, I think number one was Pokemon Go. I think Lodowick may have been a number two.
Just like guns.
Duty. Number two.
No, we did talk about Lodowick during number one because we were talking about trespass.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think number two, I think, is when we talked about Kanye.
Possibly. Kanye is a very important topic.
Kanye is always an important topic, I think.
Just ask Kanye. Kanye. Yeah, the Great Britain's laws are so favorable to the person bringing the claim for libel that some people consider Great Britain to be like a libel tourism spot. So even if you have a really kind of tenuous connection to Great Britain, that you really want to try to bring your claim there because it's so much easier.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I saw that when I was looking into it, that non-residents can, you know, take defamation libel suits to English courts because they think that's like where they're most likely to get a favorable judgment. I was looking at the example of the HBO documentary they did about Scientology. There was a whole suit that went on with, you know, publishing it there and what are they can and cannot say in terms of like allegations of what went on in the Church of Scientology, and some suits that went down that people that didn't even live there were putting forward. thought was, I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, there were lawyers there promoting that. It's like if you released a book and it published in the UK, then that gave you grounds to file your suit in the UK.
Yeah, I was reading kind of a similar thing. It was talking about how that actually had a chilling effect on people publishing books in the UK. So you might publish a book other places, but you won't in the UK because the libel laws are so scary there and you don't want to be sued there. So it's just easier and it doesn't make any kind of economic sense to go forward with publishing it there.
And you're right. They do call it libel tourism, but it's also been called libel terrorism.
Yeah.
And because they look at it as the same way, that you can't do anything without this happening.
One of the key reasons why it is so favorable to bring a libel lawsuit there is because the burden of proof, sometimes we call that the BOP, in the U.S., it lies with the person who is bringing the lawsuit and who was basically libeled. While you're in the U.K., it rests with the journalist or their media to prove that it wasn't a libelous statement to begin with. So you're shifting the burden there. And when you have the burden of proof, it always makes it much harder, unless you're the prosecutor, in which case you have the burden of proof, but it makes it much easier.
Yes, I said basically in Great Britain, defamatory statements are presumed to be false, and the party who is being sued is the one who has to prove otherwise.
That was a little defense bar joke there.
Well, I would have caught that had I been a lawyer.
Also, one of the other things in the U.S. that's kind of interesting is that you actually have to prove damages to prove your libel case or your defamation case, unless it's called defamation per se. Now, there's also defamation per quad, and defamation per se, it's basically damages are presumed. Per quad, you actually have to prove the damages as one of your element. You actually have to show an actual harm. And there's some classic examples of libel or defamation per se, different statements where damages are presumed. And I think we talked about this before, but I always like bringing them up because they're really kind of interesting.
Yes.
A statement that relates to a person's business or profession to the person's detriment. Number two, falsely claim that the person committed a crime of moral turpitude. Three, imputes unchastity on the person. Or four, the person suffers from a loathsome disease. That's just a great list of different elements, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, I remembered from my business law class, my one business law class that I took when I was at Marshall in 1978.
Uh-huh. So I'm sure whatever you remembered was definitely reliable information that we're going to go off of here.
Oh, yeah. And Riley, get ready because the business law class is referred to quite frequently.
At one class I had one semester. I learned a lot, as you can see. But I remember they said that for libel or slander or whatever, there's two things that even the truth was not a defense for. And it's kind of like what you said there, is that if you said that somebody had a venereal disease, and if you, at a certain time, I don't think this one was still on the books, if you suggested that a woman was not a virgin, that was an unmarried woman, you, even if it was a fact, you still couldn't say it. You were still guilty, even if it was true.
The person was unchaste?
Yes. That you could not say that in public.
Well, I believe, and I've always heard this, well, there's two things I've always heard. Truth is an absolute defense to defamation. And number two, that possession is 9/10 of the law. And I know that possession is not 9/10 of the law. Yes. So I'm going to guess that truth is not an absolute defense to defamation as well.
Well, that's a pretty good go by.
Yeah.
But there was like one example where in 1987, Elton John sued the Sun tabloid of England because it published false claims that he'd had sex with a male prostitute. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter. He didn't have to offer any proof. They couldn't get the guy to come forward or whatever. So he ended up walking away with $1.6 million from it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of see the utility in that, because if you're making that kind of statement, then, you know, somebody suffers a detriment because of it, then you should have to be able to back it up.
true.
Yeah.
But look at, I mean, if you've ever checked out at the grocery store and you got all those tabloid rags there in the stand, they all say things like, you know, this actor has a third eye that you just can't see because they use makeup to cover it up. And this one has, you know, seven wives that we don't know about. And none of it's true. They're just trying to sell them the magazine, the newspaper, whatever, you know?
Well, yeah, but the Elvis and Tupac abducted by aliens one, I'm pretty sure that was true.
That one is true, yeah.
But it's like you don't have to offer any proof. You can say something and then vaguely have an excuse for why you said it in America. And, you know, well, we heard from somebody's cousin that talked to somebody else's brother that was a friend of the agent's mother-in-law, and they said that.
Yeah.
And you can get away with that.
Yeah. What I thought was an interesting example I'd seen, because, you know, recently with the whole Me Too movement, it's been going on here for a few years. There are lots of allegations of assault and harassment towards lots of powerful men, and I couldn't find any instances where there was any sort of suit over like libel or defamation because these women had made these accusations. But just today I saw there was a woman in Pakistan who accused a singer and actor in Pakistan of sexual harassment, and he filed a defamation suit against her. And she, there's not been a judgment passed down yet, but there were lots of rumors going around today that she had received a jail sentence for that, which I thought was interesting because they have very similar laws to Britain because they are a part of the Commonwealth. So their defamation libel laws are very similar. But, you know, you didn't see any of that happening here when you have all these women that were accusing, like, Harvey Weinstein or mm-hmm. Matt Lauer. Not the same kind of treatment.
Did you say she received a jail sentence?
That was what they were saying. That was the rumor going around in media reports today. But she is saying that is not true. It was like the Daily Mail or some tabloid like that. That's very unreliable, saying she'd been sentenced to 3 years in prison. But that is not the case.
Well, sounds like she has a libel suit against them for saying that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
But I think also, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that Pakistan doesn't recognize women's rights to the same extent that they are, well, in the United States. And that may be where all that comes from.
I'm sure that's also part of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, quite certain that's true as well.
I did find something that said when author Rachel Ehrenfeld was sued in England, she didn't even show up, and the court issued a default judgment against her. And typically the U.S. court would enforce these rulings, but in this case, something extraordinary happened. The New York legislature took up Ehrenfeld's cause and passed a bill called the Libel Terrorism Protection Act, and many referred to it as Rachel's Law. Then the U.S. Congress acted on it, and they spoke on the House floor about it, and they called it the Speech Act. And so they passed that law. It was signed into law under Obama in 2010, and it basically says that, you know, if you're an American citizen and you publish a book, and it goes over there in England, and they try to sue you in England for it, the American courts will not enforce that on you.
Yeah, I saw that as well. I wasn't familiar with that Rachel's Law, but I did see that as well. And it's kind of interesting because generally foreign judgments like that, as long as you domesticate them, they're given full faith and credit wherever you domesticate it. So that's a pretty big line in the sand the U.S. is drawing there, saying, hey, we don't recognize that. That's not right.
Yeah, I had the same exact article pulled up on my laptop, I think, that you were quoting from, Dad. But I think it's interesting. It's tied to terrorism because the book she wrote was about various people and how terrorism is financed was in the title. And she had accused a businessman in Saudi Arabia of funding Al-Qaeda. And this was his suit against her in England. Neither of them live there, but this is, you know, libel tourism, as Michael was talking about. And it was because it was tied to that. They thought it was a national threat that this kind of, that her book would be destroyed and out of publication. So that was part of it as well, which I thought was interesting. That
a Saudi national can go to the UK because the book is published there, and they have favorable laws for that, and then sue a U.S. citizen, obtain a judgment, and then try to enforce it in the United States. I mean, I don't like that as an American.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's one of the things is you just look at it morally and you say, you know, it's not right in to a certain extent what the tabloids can say. But then on the other hand, it's going to have a real effect on people if you can't say stuff that you believe is true and somebody just has to dispute it. And now you've got to prove it and your proof may not hold up.
Yeah, it's true.
So I don't know. I don't think I like the English version of it. And I guess it's kind of stilted in history about, like you say, your reputation being more important than anything else. And then, you know, also you have to prove the damages, and here you have to prove damages and you have to prove it was malicious, that they knew that it was going to hurt you and do that. I mean, because you could repeat something that you understood to be a fact, that you got it from a reliable source and you felt that person was telling you the truth, and maybe they had it wrong. And now you're liable for libel. You're liable for libel.
Liable for libel.
That's a double whammy. But it wouldn't be malicious if you were repeating it, you know. So in America, you could say, well, there was no malicious intent. But in England, doesn't matter. You said it. Now you're going to swing. Well, you don't swing. You just pay out the butt.
Yeah. There's lots of money.
They don't hang you over there in England anymore. Although they did hang that one pirate out over the bay and let him hang there for like 2 years that we talked about in that one episode before they finally took him down left him there as a warning to other would-be pirates.
Did it work?
Well, you don't have any pirates anymore, so I guess so.
Or maybe you do, and they're just sneakier about it.
Porch pirates. Yeah, porch pirates.
Oh, there you go.
They're sneaky.
That's a new kind of pirate.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that come up under your porch and steal your furniture.
Yeah, steal your packages being delivered by UPS or FedEx or whatever.
Oh, the packages. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's the porch pirates. Arr, I'll be seizing you, your booty. Don't seize my booty.
Crack you'll yourself up with that one.
You'll get used to it, Riley.
Well, yeah, that's one interesting thing you're talking about with regard to malicious intent. And that's actually a different element of defamation. So there's actually different standards based on whether someone is a public official or a public person versus a private person. And if you're going to be a public person and sue somebody for libel or defamation in the United States, you actually have to show actual malice. So it's an even higher standard. And there's actually even a middle road in there too, that somebody is a semi-public figure. So you have
you.
Yeah. Public. No, not like me. I'm private.
No, you're public. You're a judge.
Nah.
That makes you semi-private.
That'd be private.
Semi-public.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess if somebody got on Facebook and complained about having to pay a traffic ticket somewhere, then, you know, I really couldn't probably say anything.
Yeah, probably not.
I guess a semi-public person. But, there, you know, that's the difference between public, semi-public, and private person. So something you might say against a public person, if you don't show actual malice, then you can't prove your case as a public person. Whereas if you say that about a private person, then it doesn't matter. The simple fact you said that is enough because that's a private person. So it's almost kind of like if you're a public person, you have kind of an expectation of people talking crap about you.
Hmm. So private people and public people have different positive and not positive things that can be said about them.
Yeah. And it seems like if you think about the difference between the UK and the US, it's almost like that's completely flipped around, that a public person has more protection and really less burden of proof.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Very much is.
Especially, I know Megan spilled some tea in the interview that I guess the palace or the institution or whatever she went. Were you gonna make a joke about tea? Is that where you were going, about the tea party?
No, I was gonna say that was one of my favorite memes or jokes about the whole thing.
Yeah. But she said that the firm will often host the tabloids at the palace for parties and stuff. So there's lots of money that goes into these dinners and parties they'll have for the tabloids. She suggested it's sort of an exchange for you won't publish anything damaging about us, and we'll do this for you. Get money, and
you'll
get this fancy party. Yeah, which I guess was suggested in relation to William's rumored affair a few years ago that was everywhere in the U.S. But I guess if you were in the U.K., that wasn't in your tabloids or in your media, because the palace and the family very quickly got rid of that story.
I never even heard about that.
Yeah, that's why it was a rumored affair he was having with one of Kate's friends while she was pregnant. And it was very popular story here, but it was not allowed to be published and discussed in the UK.
It just spread amongst us colonials.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not super into all the different tabloids and the different royal stories that are going on, but I heard about that here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So it did. You're right. It did get out a lot around here. Around these here parts.
Well, some of them, though, I think get carried away. I read one. It said that this one was the McDonald's restaurants versus Morris and Steele. And in this case, Morris and Steele published a leaflet alleging that McDonald's sold unhealthy food, which is that something you could argue? That they sell unhealthy food? And also that they exploited its workforce. Well, you know, most of them probably feel exploited if they're making minimum wage, so they probably feel kind of exploited. But the ruling under the Defamation Act was decided in McDonald's favor, that they won the lawsuit in that, suing them, that they said that they, because they printed that.
Where'd that take place?
That was in the European court.
Okay.
So we have some listeners over in the UK, so you better watch what you're saying there about McDonald's, or Big Burger is going to come after us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I just, it's, you know, you don't go to McDonald's to get fit, you know. I've started my diet. Let's go hit McDonald's and get some health food.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would even argue? I don't see how that could be argued as defamation. And to say that you mistreat your workforce, when if they're just talking about the wage standard, and if the wage standard is minimum wage, then that's, you know, I don't know. But McDonald's won a big lawsuit against this group for doing that.
Well, that reminds me of that documentary that was, it was American, the Supersize Me, that was made here. That was a guy who ate McDonald's every single day for a month and had all sorts of, I mean, said all sorts of negative things about McDonald's in the documentary, about how he often got sick and how bad he felt and he gained weight and all this stuff. But that wasn't, I mean,
yeah,
he wasn't sued for that here.
Well, he's from West Virginia.
Yeah.
The guy that did that.
Yeah.
And he did gain all kinds of weight and stuff. But what would you expect?
Well,
you know, that's not like that was, wow, can you believe it?
We had to watch that in health class. The whole time I was thinking, like, I don't need to learn this.
Can you believe he ate 5 Big Macs a day and put on weight? Can you believe that? Yes, that's exactly what I expected.
No way. You mean his cholesterol's through the roof now?
The ending to that movie was not a surprise.
It was a plot twist.
So, I guess if we had to have our way, are we pleased with the way we have it here, or do we wish it was more restrictive like they do in England, where they, you know, don't let you say as much and you have to be careful what you do? I don't know.
Right. I mean, I guess, I don't know, I guess it's a very American way of thinking, but that, like, what you can say and freedom of expression is more important than someone's reputation. I guess just because, like, I mean, that Me Too example was what solidified that opinion for me, because I think you wouldn't have had as big of a movement and as many consequences for the people here if people wouldn't have been allowed to make those allegations, or news sources wouldn't have been allowed to publish those stories, which obviously ended up being truthful stories. It wasn't rumor. It wasn't defamation. But, you know, I think ultimately there's probably more good that can come out of people being able to say those kinds of things without being sued, even if it does mean you can have lots of tabloids that say ridiculous things about celebrities.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There is some good that comes out of the freedom of speech. And there's also some bad stuff you kind of have to swallow with it too, because you have to put up with other people expressing themselves for things that you might not necessarily agree with, or that everybody can pretty much agree are just horrible. But, you know, I guess you take the good with the bad, because, you know, some good stuff comes from it as well. So
Yeah.
But I think I agree with you. I think I like the American system better. And I think the person bringing the case should have the burden of proof. I mean, that's kind of one of the real sticking points I have, is that you can sue somebody and then automatically they have to basically prove that they aren't wrong. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. And I think that what solidifies it for me against the British system of it is it's not so much what could be said here as what won't be said there under that. I think there's some things that would go undetected and unsaid because people are worried about having to go to court and prove these things and stuff and ending up on the wrong end of that. And even if you win, you still got to be in court for years sometimes and spend a lot of money on resources and lawyers and all that other kind of stuff. So you have to come down to, is it worth it? So what gets stifled because of that?
Yeah. Especially because anyone anywhere apparently could just use an English court to take their defamation or libel case. That's just crazy.
They have real loose standards of standing, don't they, Mike?
Absolutely. Look at you using your legal terms.
Yeah.
Now, there is one thing about the English system that I do think is better.
I think
we can probably all agree that the powdered wigs are definitely a plus. I would like to wear a powdered wig in court.
I agree.
So, well, I also think that they speak gooder than we do, and and they're more polite and civil to each other than we are.
Yes. Well, Riley, there's one thing that we always do on Court Appointed, and I guess it'll be up to you all to decide if you want to keep on with the tradition, but it's one of my personal favorite portions, and I think it probably would be yours too, because you really get to kind of grill your dad with what questions about stuff you just talked about. The legal brief
like
section.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you do want to do it, it's very important that you have to say, now I think it's time for
legal brief. We just fell into that on the very first episode and did that like at the same time together.
Yeah, it wasn't even planned.
No, it just happened. And
so
stuck.
The typical disclaimer goes something like this. Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions that we talked about, and I see if he even paid attention or listened.
That's a good disclaimer.
So, well, was he even sober?
Do you have any legal brief questions to ask your dad?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm on the spot. Do you?
Well, I have a couple, because I prepared for it, because I knew it was coming.
Ahead. I didn't do my homework.
She's still learning the ropes. That's all right.
Okay, so we talked about McDonald's in Europe. Do you know what they call a quarter pounder in Europe?
They call it a... that was on... what was that movie with Quentin Tarantino movie with Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta?
Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction. It's something like a something Royale or something, isn't it? A Royale with cheese.
Do you know why they call it a Royale with cheese?
Because that's how much the queen is worth, a quarter pound or something?
A little bit more than that.
No, because they don't have the metric system over there. They don't know what a quarter pound is.
Oh, okay. Well, why do they call it a Royale? What is a Royale? Is that a quarter pound?
I don't know. We'll just have to leave that one up to be figured out at some point. I don't know.
I'll have a three stoner with cheese. Don't they measure thing in stones?
Yeah, a three stoner might weigh a lot.
Or else you're in California. Is that your legal brief questions?
I have another. I just didn't know if Riley had one. She wanted thought of one or anything like that.
I
don't.
You don't? Are you finding one?
No.
Michael can do a second one while you're looking for one.
Sure.
Okay. So I said there's different kinds of defamation. Defamation per se and defamation per quad. So do you know what the difference is?
Per se means just the fact you said it means it's defamation, I think. And per quod means you have to prove it.
Yeah, that's partially true. Per se means that the statements are just inherently so bad that damages are almost presumed. Whereas per quod, you actually have to show actual damages because that's an element of proving your case. That that it was stated and that, you know, you suffered damages from it. So, but if it's a defamation per se case, it's just the simple fact you said it, like, you know what? You don't even have to show damages because it's so bad. You called me unchaste. Therefore, you're going to pay me some money.
That's right. Because you ruined me for life.
That's right.
All right. I don't know if this follows the format, but I'm doing my best.
That's right. We're breaking the mold here.
It's whatever format you want, Riley.
we talked about the Super Size Me documentary, right? And like with McDonald's and defamation and everything. Do you know after eating McDonald's for a month how much the guy gained?
Hello.
13% body mass increase and also 58 milligram raise in his cholesterol. And near liver failure. So,
man, he had too many of them cheese royales.
Too many royales with cheese.
He put on nearly 2 stones.
Yeah. He ate too many quarter
stoners.
He got too
stoned and went to McDonald's and ate.
Which reminds me, I think there was actually a follow-up documentary called Super High Me, where somebody smoked a lot of weed for an extended period of time to see what happened.
Really? Mm-hmm. You know who Jaime was back in my day, don't you? You said Super Jaime made me think of that.
I don't.
Jaime was the robot on the old Get Smart TV show that, Mel Brooks, I guess, was the guy that directed that and everything. But that was a very popular TV show back in my day, was Get Smart. And he had the shoe telephone and stuff like that. Missed him by this much. Well, I guess you had to be there.
I didn't know Mel Brooks did that show.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, he did that.
See, I learned something today during Legal Briefs.
Well, there you go. You know, there was a remake made a while back, and Steve Carell played the main character. And it's funny how much he looks like. I can't remember what the character's name was now, or the actor. But he looks just like the guy that played it. That was back in the 60s.
I've seen both their faces. I agree with you.
Yeah, they do. They did look alike.
Well, Riley, do you have any other legal briefs to ask your dad?
I don't. I'll be more prepared
because sometimes
next time.
He likes to turn the tables and ask you a question. So.
Oh no.
Every once in a while, I'll have one.
I don't like being questioned by my dad.
It's usually off the wall.
I did find. I did find Super Jaime. It was released on 420 in 2008.
420?
And he abstained from weed for 30 days and then smoked it continually for 30 days.
Oh.
And what did he find?
I haven't seen it. I'm going to guess he found that he got super high.
He found that he couldn't find his ass with both hands.
He found McDonald's and then ate 30 days straight. So it's kind of a crossover.
Yeah, it was like the prequel.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. Tommy, you did pretty well today on Legal Briefs. I think you know.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate Riley jumping in and keeping us going. And I guess Michael's going to pass the gavel over to you. He's the one with all the knowledge. Now you are. Somehow I got skipped completely. I just keep being the dumbass, and I'm pretty good at that part.
Still haven't gone to law school. I wouldn't say I have all the knowledge yet. I think you and I are still on about the same level. So,
well, let's hope you're in better shape than me, because otherwise we're both in trouble.
Yeah, and I'll probably still pop on from time to time as I have time, and you guys decide you want to have me on to talk about different legal ins and outs, and yeah, so.
Well, you let us know your availability, and you've always got a spot here, pal.
Well, thanks, guys. Well, thanks to everybody for for listening to us over the years. It's been an awesome run, and I'll see you here in the future.
We'll catch you on the horizon as we fade into the sunset.
That was a few different expressions you were mixing up there.
Like a pirate, not hanging from a.
Yeah. For 2 years. 2 years. Like a pirate not hanging dead for 2 years is what we'll be like.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello. Welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is the family TV. I think without realizing it, one of the mainstays of Americana is fading from existence. While growing up and as young parents, one of the most enduring memories is of the family television. Sitcom TV would rule during the 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. time slot. Families would gather around and watch all of these comedies or dramas, and you didn't dare miss because you couldn't record it or play it on demand or something. You could wait until summer reruns and maybe, if you were lucky, catch the episode or episodes you missed. But TV viewing was a completely different experience than it is today. When I was a kid, most people only had one TV. If you were lucky, you might have a second somewhere else in the house, but very few people did. So everyone had to compromise on what to watch. Besides that, there wasn't a lot of choice as we only had 2.5 channels to choose from. No cable, no satellite, or anything like that. Just that big metal antenna on the roof to grab what signal you could get. I remember when I was young watching Bonanza, All in the Family, The Red Skelton Show, Red Fox, Little House on the Prairie, and The Mary Tyler Moore Show, to name a few. As young parents, there was The Love Boat and Fantasy Island, Hill Street Blues, St. Elsewhere, and Friends and Seinfeld. Every night, we would map out our shows to watch because you didn't want to miss anything. Now, watching TV is much more individualized. With Riley on campus, there are only two of us at our house that has 6 TVs. You know, just in case you might want to watch TV in every room in the house. Not only that, you don't even need a TV. Most young people, I think, either watch phones or laptops. I'll do that if there is not a TV available, but that is never my first choice. It blew my mind when Riley moved back onto campus and I came across her TV downstairs. I called her to say, "Hey, you forgot your TV. Do you want me to bring it to you?" She said, "Why do I need that? I have a laptop." "Well, won't you or your roommates sit around and watch TV together?" She just laughed and said, "Boomer." It seems TV watching should now be more correctly called show watching. It has become much more individualized. You don't have to maintain a schedule of when something is on because once it airs, it's available somewhere. This is a totally foreign thought to me. Being somebody that must watch the local news at 6 and 11 as well as the national news at 6:30, I said, "What about the news? How do you watch the news if you don't have TV?" I was informed no one needs the news because we have Twitter. Twitter doesn't have Lester Holt telling me what is important that I need to know. Besides that, can you really believe everything you see on Twitter? I think these past 4 to 6 years have taught us that the answer to that is a resounding no. I do find it sad that there will be no more must-see Thursdays. Saturday nights were big nights for shows as well, but now the networks don't put anything on Saturday nights because no one's watching anyway. I will admit that I am probably much too dependent on watching TV, and I will also admit that probably less TV is better. I mean, that is where most of what I know came from, so that alone probably makes me lose this argument. Anyway, I just think we should all tip our hats to the passing of another great American tradition, the family TV. I will always remember it fondly, with the warm glow showing the two parents sitting on the couch with their children gathered around them sitting or laying on the floor for their daily reward of family TV. It is too bad that the warm glow was the radiation emitted by the TV mutating us all. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.